It was my first semester in seminary. The year was 1995. As a first-year student, I dutifully signed up for many of the introductory classes, including an introduction to pastoral care. The reading load was heavy, but our professor told us that we would spend the bulk of our time in the classroom in role play, getting acquainted with the substance of pastoral care, those one-on-one interactions. I was surprised by the first role play. This was a Methodist seminary. In the written description that we got, we learned that a young man had just died in a hospital. The man was gay. From the descriptions, the individual descriptions that we received, we learned that the various family members had different understandings and beliefs about homosexuality. For the students in the class, this would be a true learning experience. Now, I cannot imagine volunteering for the first role play, but nevertheless, I was chosen, whatever that means to you theologically, to be one of the chosen. And to this day, I give thanks that I was not in the role of the chaplain. That was played by another first-year student who I learned later was from a more theologically conservative tradition. As the role play began, I found out that my role was actually to be the grieving partner of the man who had just died. I was alone in the waiting room when the student chaplain, entered. Doing his very best to comfort me, and I am convinced that he was doing his best to comfort me, he sat down beside me in the waiting room and proceeded on short order to tell me that the death of my lover, and I'm sure he would not have used the word lover, he would have used the word friend. The death of my friend was God's will. Let me back up for a moment and tell you that our professor had told us to get into the role, to try to assume some of the emotion that somebody might feel in a pastoral situation. After the student chaplain had uttered those fateful words to me, my reaction was immediate and visceral. Following my professor's instructions, I stood up and stated emphatically, face to face, "That's BS." Except that I failed to use the social niceties of using just the letters. Welcome to an introduction to pastoral care. In my years as a minister, there are a handful of statements that I avoid in pastoral situations. I do not say, "I understand," because I'm sure I don't. I don't say, "Everything will be okay," because I don't know that to be true. I don't say, "Surely something good will come out of that," or out of this, because I believe that that trivializes the immediate sense of the loss. And I don't say, "It's God's will," because I no longer have an understanding of God who willfully chooses our future for us. I don't use these simplistic statements because in the face of tragedy and loss, they fall drastically short in meeting the pastoral need of the moment. Phil Simmons was 35 in 1993. When he learned that he had ALS, or Lou Gehrig's disease. The doctors told him that he had less than 5 years to live. He beat the odds, living 9 years, but more importantly, it is possible that in those 9 years, he learned not the art of dying, but the art of living. In those 9 years, Simmons wrote the book, Learning to Fall, The Blessings of an Imperfect Life. Having his days numbered gave him an urgency to ask the sort of questions that I believe that most of us, questions that you and I avoid, questions about what it means to be fully alive. Perhaps the place to begin is with understanding and acceptance. Phil Simmons writes, "Life is both more and less than we had hoped for. We've known Earth's pleasures, the sunlight on a freshly mowed lawn, leaves trembling with rain, a child's laugh, the sight of a lover stepping from the bath. We've also seen marriages sour and careers crash. We've seen children lost to illness and accident. Most of us understand that in life there are both the peaks and the valleys. But most of us assume that when there is loss, serious loss, that happens over there. It happens to others, not to us. If it happens to us, we assume that we're being punished, or we discover as if for the first time that life is not fair. Most often, if you will excuse the cliche, loss will come as a thief in the night. And it will take something from us that we never, never thought it was possible to lose. Religion, at its most meaningful, teaches us how to navigate life's journey, especially during loss and suffering. Phil Simmons writes, "In the Christian theology of the fall, we all suffer the fall from grace, the fall from primordial connectedness with God." Simmons' earliest memory of falling down a set of stairs was his own expulsion from the garden. Ever after, he writes, "I have been falling forward and down into the scarred years of conscious life, falling into the knowledge of pain, of grief, of loss. We have no choice but to fall, and little to say about the time or the means." In the Hindu tradition, one of the principal deities is Shiva, who is known as the destroyer or the transformer, part of the grand pantheon of life. In Buddhism, the first of the Four Noble Truths teaches us that to be human is to suffer. This may all sound fatalistic. It may sound as if life is merely one fall after another. And yet part of the understanding of and acceptance means knowing that death and loss are part of the natural order. Understanding means that death and life are two sides of the same coin, that one cannot be present without the other. It is perhaps through science and evolution that we can also see that death and new creativity are intimately related. Death and loss, in other words, are good for us. That is hard to grasp. Given the inevitability of death and loss and suffering, how might we respond? Perhaps, says Phil Simmons, we do have some say in the manner of our falling. Perhaps in the way of our falling, we have the opportunity to express our essential humanity. Simmons continues, beyond the dualities of feast and famine, we've glimpsed something else. We've known the dark woods and also the moon. But perhaps there is a third way, the way through loss, to a wholeness, a richness, a depth we have never before envisioned. After 4 years, or at year four after his diagnosis, Phil Simmons learned to find contentment, not in climbing the peaks of New Hampshire, which he had done all his life, but in putting on his socks in the morning and going downstairs. His job, he realized, was to discover what he might have to say, not about climbing, but about remaining upright and learning to fall. Simmons saw this as a blessing. When he was no longer able to walk, but still able to hug his children, he saw that as a blessing. when he was no longer able to hug his children, but he was able to receive hugs from them, he saw that as a blessing. When he was no longer able to talk, but he was able to listen, he saw that as a blessing. All of life is a blessing. Simmons is very reluctant to give us those tabloid-style tips to successful living. You know what I'm talking about. You see them in the grocery store. The front magazine, it's right there where you'll buy it on your way out. Don't wait for a tragedy to appreciate the small things in life. Or perhaps stop and smell the honeysuckle. Or better yet, count your blessings. Appreciate what you have instead of what you don't. Life, he writes, is not a problem to be solved. We are not about the business of looking for techniques or solutions that will bring greater joy to life. Life, instead, is a mystery. Life will bring us to the cliff's edge, and no technique will be our salvation. Embrace the mystery. Embrace being brought to the cliff's edge. If spiritual growth is what you seek, don't ask for blessings, ask for challenges. The blessings of life are ever sweeter when fired in the heat of life's trials. It is by falling that our lives are most present to us, that we are given back our lives even as we lose them. When we learn to fall, we learn that only by letting go our grip, that we ordinarily grip on all that we ordinarily find most precious, our achievements, our plans, our loved ones, our very selves, can we find ultimately the most profound freedom. In the act of letting go of our lives, we return more fully to them. What I believe Simmons is saying is that learning to fall means letting go of the grip with which we clutch life so tightly. That clutch is our insistence that life be one way, our way, that we are in control, that life will be made perfect or complete by our accomplishments or by our children and their accomplishments, or even that we ourselves will attain perfection in this life or a next life. We know that we have truly grown up when we stop trying to fix people. All we can really do for people is to love them and to treat them with kindness. This goes for ourselves, too. This goes for ourselves especially. As a writer, Phil Simmons looks squarely at the word falling. What, he asks, do we fall away from? We fall from ego. We fall from our carefully constructed identities, our reputations, our previous selves. We fall from ambition. We fall from grasping. We fall, at least temporarily, from reason. And what do we fall into? We fall into humility. We fall into compassion. We fall into emptiness. We fall into oneness with forces larger than ourselves. And we fall into oneness with others whom we realize are likewise falling. We fall at last into the presence of the sacred, into godliness, into mystery, into our better, diviner selves. That's diviner selves, not designer selves. Learning how to fall is not a story of triumph over adversity. For Simmons, he finds victory in the falling itself, in learning how to live more fully, consciously, in the presence of mystery. When we learn to fall, we learn to accept the vulnerability that is our human endowment, the cost of walking upright on the earth. This is the journey we must all take, the work of learning to live richly in the face of life and all that life brings our way. From our first faltering steps, Simmons says, we may fall into disappointment or grief, fall into or out of love, fall out of youth or health. And though we have little choice as to the timing or the means of our descent, we may, he affirms, fall with grace to grace. Earlier this year, Reverend Kathy Stivers, a chaplain at Children's Hospital in Richmond, described this very poignantly for our fellowship in Fredericksburg. In the families that she works with, when a child has a serious illness, injury, or disease, she works with the families to learn what she calls a new normal. I believe this is what it means to fall not just with grace, but to grace. I don't want to suggest for a second that any of this is automatic or easy, and I'm not convinced that we can prepare ourselves to embrace the magnitude of loss that Reverend Kathy works with every day. But with the beginning of understanding and acceptance that falling is a normal part of life, perhaps for some of us, it will ease the transition to a new normal. As I wrote this sermon, I kept wondering, what falling, what serious falling would be like to me? I've led a fairly easy life. My father died July of 2007, just 1 year ago. He was 82. And while I have certainly greatly felt his loss, he was an amazing man. I've also understood it. He led a good life. But the death of my father also resulted in a major, major disruption that has shattered a 20-year meaningful relationship in my family. It is something that I could never have anticipated. I now know that I am no longer welcome in the home that I grew up in. Even to this day, I don't know what the new normal looks like. What I do know is that my partner, Carol, has been a godsend, and that my colleagues and ministry in ministry have sat with me as I sobbed. Ministers do not have many safe places to sob. As Unitarian Universalists, the divine, the sacred, the holy, God, if you will, is found within the crevices of life, found in the sustaining web of life and the creativity and the transformation in which we move and have our being. Ours, or perhaps I should say mine, mine is an eclectic theology. Drawing on feminist theology, I find the sacred, the holy, the divine, most often in relationship, in the love of family and friends that hold me upright, even as I am learning to fall. So may it be.